I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 9th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the attendance by roll.
Hanson Rick is present. Wasliwick, Amy.
Wasliwick present.
Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman present.
Akam, Patty.
Akam present.
Ackland, Susan.
Ackland present.
Backer, Jeff.
Backer present.
Becker Finn, Jamie.
Becker Finn present.
Ackland, Rob.
Ackland present.
Fisher, Peter.
Fisher present.
Green, Steve.
Green present.
Igo, Spencer.
Igo present.
Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan present.
Keeler, Heather.
Keeler present.
Lee, Fu.
Lee present.
Lippert, Todd.
Lippert present.
Lewick, Dale.
Lewick present.
Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison present.
Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson present.
Tice, Tama.
Tice present.
Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Thursday, February 4th, 2021. Representative Ackland, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes from the previous meeting.
Representative Ackland moves the minutes for the February 4th, 2021 meeting. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for the Joint Agriculture and Environment Committees for Friday, February 5th, 2021. Representative Fisher, have you reviewed those minutes?
Yes, Chair Hansen, I have reviewed those minutes. I move their approval.
Representative Fisher moves the minutes of the joint meeting of the Agriculture and Environment Committees. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Members, we have three bills today. The first one is House File 387 by Representative Vang, Turtle Taking Provisions Modified. I will move that House File 387 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Vang also has an author's amendment. Representative Vang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will move the A2 amendment. Representative Vang, could you explain your amendment briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment A2 adds in types of methods prohibited in taking of turtles and specifies the amount of turtle species taken. This is the language that I've worked with DNR.
Is there any discussion on the A2 amendment to give the bill in the shape she would like, Representative Vang would like? Any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, yes.
Hanson, yes. Wasliwick, Amy.
Wasliwick, aye.
Wasliwick, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. That is 19 ayes and zero noes.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, I see there's another author's amendment. I will move the A21-0010 amendment. Representative Vang, could you please explain this amendment briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a technical change, and I would like your support. Thank you.
Members, is there any discussion? Any discussion? The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, aye.
Acomb, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Beckerfin, Jamie.
Aye.
Beckerfin, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Gamma.
Tice, aye.
That is 19 ayes and 0 noes.
Thank you. The amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As you all may have read the bill, House File 387 prohibits commercial harvesting of turtles. It still allows individuals to take or have turtles for personal use, just as long as not being resold. Majority of the turtles harvested in Minnesota are painted turtle, snapping turtle, and spiny softshell. Majority of the neighboring Midwest states, except for Iowa, have disallowed commercial harvesting of turtles due to turtle population concerns. According to the DNR's data, the number of individuals with turtle seller licenses have decreased from 51 individuals with licenses in 2003 to recently 21. This shows that the legislation will only affect a small number of individuals who commercially harvest, but will go a long way in protecting our turtle populations. Commercial harvesting is an unsustainable practice, and over the years, there's been efforts to mitigate these impacts, such as a moratorium on turtle seller licenses, but we are afraid that it may not be enough. Thousands to tens of thousands of turtles are trapped each year in Minnesota, and they play a major role in our ecosystem. I have a testifier here today who can explain why and the urgency of taking care of our turtle population.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Is Colette Atkins, the Center for Biological Diversity, here?
Yes, I am here.
Welcome, Ms. Atkins. If you could identify yourself and who you're with for the record.
My name is Colette Atkins, and I'm a Minnesota-based scientist and attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity.
Proceed.
The Center is a national nonprofit organization. We've got more than 1.7 million supporters dedicated to the conservation of rare wildlife and plants. And I offer testimony on behalf of about 20,000 supporters here in Minnesota. We ask that you support HF 387 and ban the commercial collection of Minnesota's turtles. Collection and sale of wild turtles for pets, meat, and traditional Asian medicines is one of the top threats contributing to the decline and the extinction of wild turtle populations across the world. Commercial collection places additional pressure on turtle populations that already suffer from threats like water pollution, habitat loss, road mortality, and climate change. Minnesota's own native turtles are highly sought after for both domestic and international commercial trade. And even though Minnesota took that previously important step of limiting the number of turtle seller licenses, unsustainable numbers of turtles continue to be collected each year. Just in 2019, a couple dozen commercial turtle trappers removed nearly 7,000 painted turtles from the state's waterway. That level of exploitation is possible because a single trapper with minimal effort can place several inexpensive underwater hoop nets that each can catch dozens of turtles. One trapper can wipe out a waterway of all these turtles in just a few days' efforts. And unlike typically hunted species like deer, turtles can take a decade or more to reach an age where they can begin breeding, and their populations depend on adults living for several more decades and breeding throughout their long lifespan. The science shows that even a modest collection pressure on snapping turtles, for example, can quickly lead to a 50% decline in turtle populations. My organization, the Center for Biological Diversity, has worked for more than a decade to end unsustainable commercial turtle trapping across the United States. We've filed administrative petitions and worked on legislation to end commercial trapping in Florida, Missouri, New York, South Carolina, and Texas. And we secured additional protections and quotas in states like Arkansas, Georgia, Iowa, and Oklahoma. For so many other issues, Minnesota is a national leader in environmental protection. But our antiquated law on turtle trapping is a stain on the state's conservation record. Minnesota's only a handful of states across the whole country that still allow such commercial collection of turtles. Wild turtles are an essential part of Minnesota's ecosystems. The citizens depend on lawmakers to protect them for generations to come. Your support for this bill would stop just a very small number of for-profit turtle traffickers from depleting the state's great wild heritage. Please support HF 387. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Atkinson. There's a couple questions, but I want to get the other two testifiers in, Representative Heinzman, before we take the questions, if that's okay. We'll go Mr. Smith.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter, do you have my presentation?
Mr. Smith, if you could identify yourself and who you're with for the record.
Yep, Mr. Chair, my name is Christopher Smith. I am the Conservation Committee Chair for the Minnesota Herpetological Society. We are a nonprofit organization that has approximately 300 members in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Smith, we asked you to share your screen with the presentation.
Okay, yep, I can do that.
That was in the email I sent to you with the instructions.
Can you see the screen now? All right, thank you. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of background, and I wanted to preface my presentation with the fact that I am a hunter and an angler. I understand the importance of those activities in Minnesota. Minnesota has 9 species of native turtles, and the 3 species that are currently allowed to be harvested both recreationally and commercially are the painted turtle, the snapping turtle, and the spiny softshell. In addition to these 9 native species, we also have 1 invasive species present in the state that is not depicted here. For a little bit of background, because this can be a hard concept to understand, Mrs. Atkins mentioned this earlier, but that turtles can take quite a long time to reach maturity. Many of our turtle species are very long-lived, and this diagram here shows just the reproductive potential, just to try to illustrate the point that turtles are very different from more traditional game species that we're all used to. And so here you can see starting off at age 0, so the year that a turtle or white-tailed deer, for example, were to be born or hatched. Through year 17, you can see that a white-tailed deer at that point would have produced over 900 descendants, whereas a snapping turtle in that same amount of time would just be laying its first clutch of eggs. And those eggs are not a guarantee of future offspring that reach adult age. Many nests are eaten by predators. And in fact, this study that created this document here estimated that over 1,400 eggs are needed to be laid before a single individual reaches adult reproductive status. So you can see there is a need for many, many decades of reproduction before the original adult itself is replaced within the population. And this is why it's really important that, you know, commercial turtle harvest be ended, because it's not a sustainable practice. These populations cannot handle this sort of adult mortality. As was mentioned earlier, there was a moratorium placed on new turtle cellular licenses in the early 2000s with the goal that eventually the practice would go away. The idea behind the moratorium is that these turtle sellers would have an opportunity to phase this out of their business model It was also aimed at slowly reducing the amount of commercial harvest that occurred in the state, despite the fact that the number of licensees has declined significantly. The number of turtles being harvested is actually still quite high. And in recent years, we're actually seeing an upward trend in the number of painted turtles harvested in the state. And you can see here during some of the early coordination, several folks, including a then senator, announced that this was just the first step to eventually eliminate commercial turtle harvest. So these folks have long known that this was coming. It should be a surprise to none of them. And here also included on this slide is a map showing the states in red that still allow some form of commercial turtle harvest. You can see Minnesota is one of only a small number of states that still allow this practice, which consequently has resulted in increasing pressure on our Minnesota turtles. And with that, I'd happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Ms. Pierce, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Chairman and committee members, I'm Ann Pierce, the Acting Director for Ecological and Water Resources with the Department of Natural Resources. And we are here in support of Representative Vang's bill and for the reasons that have been stated currently. Just to add a little bit to what Chris has already stated, the states that he showed in that map that still allow commercial harvest, of those, only five other states allow commercial for harvest without restrictions. And what that is causing is more pressure on the turtles for Minnesota, because we're one of the last remaining states where those can be harvested without restrictions. And there's a growing demand, and that is putting pressure on our turtle populations. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, there's extensive written testimony that has been submitted and has been posted, so I would encourage you to take a look at that if you have not. Also, Commissioner Meyer from the Department of Natural Resources is available. We're going to go to some questions now. So Representative Heintzman, then Representative Backer, and then Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Heintzman. Chair. I have a number of questions, and maybe the bill author could help us out. The bill as amended, Representative Vang, is going a couple of different directions here. And just like we heard in Ms. Pierce's comments, that there's only five other states that allow turtle harvest without restrictions. Have we checked with DNR to see if we could try to bring some kind of restrictive, like, for example, I think the first testifier mentioned that one trapper took 7,000. Have you checked with DNR to see if we could restrict the number of turtles and reduce that so that we're back into a harvest number that maybe could be sustainable? I'm just curious if we've found out the answer to some questions like that.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman, for your question. The amendment A2, the one that we just amended to the bill, does specify further restrictions on how many turtles can be taken on those species. And this is the DNR's language. So it's taken a step further on prohibiting how much we can take turtles in Minnesota.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heintzman, members, just let me just go a little bit farther than that. We approached Representative Vang when we saw her bill introduced because we recognize the grave danger our turtle populations are in the state of Minnesota. Initially, our position was to prohibit all taking of soft-shell turtles, which are in immediate peril, but also try to protect all of our turtles. And as you've heard from previous testifiers, the initial intent back in the early 2000s when the commercial turtle harvesting issue was discussed was to have these license holders sunset and reduce and eventually eliminated. back in the day, it wasn't estimated that it would take 19 years to get to that point in time. So we were happy to see this language. We approached Representative Vang, and it's just the turtle populations within the state of Minnesota, we feel are in significant threat, and we need to do whatever we can to protect those. The bill does allow a person, a resident with a fishing license, to obtain a turtle license and harvest up to 3 snapping turtles of certain sizes and 3 Western red painting turtles of certain sizes. We will also be surveying those individuals to try to get a handle on that take as well. But it's in our best interest, we feel, to protect the turtle population and still allow some of that traditional or more social uses of turtles. A lot of people like to have turtle stew, and they do that, you know, certain times of year and things like that. So we're trying to come up with a compromise to protect the turtles while still allow individuals to pursue that if they desire.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to hear from you, Commissioner. Thank you for being here. I do have a follow-up question. As I'm reading the amendment, I'm trying to just confirm that, say, for example, a school or a homeschool group has more than 3 painted turtles. Are they going to be in trouble without a license?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I am trying to get to the entire section of 97C. We are keeping language that would allow individuals to have turtles for turtle races, for example, things of that nature. So we are trying to continue with that educational component as well. If the bill isn't clear enough on that, we can certainly work to clarify that issue, because I think that is important as well, trying to keep that educational component there if the committee decides to.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I'm reading it, I don't see an exemption. I see that 3 turtles might be allowed without a permit or a special license. But if they go beyond that, it appears that somebody could be in trouble and potentially be breaking the law. That would be a concern. There was mentioned in testimony that there are invasive turtles in Minnesota. Maybe the commissioner or some other that might be familiar with that, highlight that just quickly, which turtle species we're talking about that are invasive.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. So the red-eared slider turtle is a non-native introduced species, and it's a very common pet trade turtle, and so it's released often after perhaps children are no longer interested in the pet. This turtle, much to our surprise, is successfully overwintering in our state, despite being a species that is naturally occurring in the southern U.S., and it does compete with our native turtles for basking locations. It's a little bit bigger turtle, so it can actually push our native turtles off of logs. It can compete for nesting resources and can also spread disease to our native turtles. Thank you.
Final question, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Heintzman. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the testifiers suggested that there was other significant causes for turtles being impacted around the state. I'm assuming traffic is one of the major ones. Do we have any hard numbers on the impact of traffic versus trapping versus other causes?
Ms. Pierce or Mr. Smith or Ms. Adkins?
This is Ann Pierce, Chairman and committee members. We don't have a lot of numbers on the basically roadkill that's occurring. There are a lot of groups, however, that actually go out in the spring and put up signs so that you will minimize the roadkill as turtles are crossing the road mostly during their mating season. We do know that even though, as Commissioner Meyer mentioned, the decline in licenses has not been followed by a decline in the harvest, and actually in some years likely because of most other states closing completely and all but five restricting, Minnesota is just being pressured more and more, and the harvest is actually going up.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Heintzman, one just, more?
No, not a question. Just confirming that there apparently are no hard numbers on traffic and other causes of fatalities in the turtle species.
Yes, we don't have hard numbers on that.
Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. I received this email from a constituent, and he wanted to share details that's not being talked about. So I'm going to read you his email, just portions of it, not all of it. This is from his perspective. He goes, the total turtle harvest in the state is minimum compared to the number of turtles run over, wallowed up, and taken by predators, including turtle eggs consumed by predators. As an avid outdoorsman and a firm believer in managed conservation, I know the current harvest does not pose a risk to the turtle population. I worked for the Minnesota DNR section of Fishery for 36 years. During those years, countless turtles were drowned in trap nets set to harvest walleyes or sample game fish population. In addition, when I first started with the state in 1978, turtles were considered rough fish and were to be destroyed. Old timers told stories of taking axes and splitting the shells of the turtles and throwing them into pits. So this gentleman was involved with the DNR back in 1978 seems to have some additional opinion that the greater, from his perspective, is turtles being ran over, plowed up, and taken by predators. And I don't know how we address those things. It seems like that this bill may be focused on something that doesn't get to the true root of the problems. And that's my concern I'm familiar with turtles. I live near a river. I see turtles all my life, snapping turtles and stuff. People would go swimming in the river and just always had to be careful of the snapping turtles. But that I wanted to share with the committee members from one of my constituents. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will defer to the expert in this. I'm aware that turtles face many threats in their environment, and I will defer to Mr. Smith to talk more about those types of threats.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang. So you are absolutely correct. Turtles face many threats, and as the writer to that email mentions, nest predation is a very significant risk. Road mortality is absolutely a very significant risk, and the Minnesota Herpetological Society, along with several other conservation organizations, actually run a project called the Minnesota Turtle Crossing Tally and Count. This is a project that's aimed at trying to get a better handle on road mortality impacts. While certainly that number is going to be quite large, it doesn't negate from the fact that the commercial turtle harvest that is currently being conducted in Minnesota is also quite large and significant. And unlike the nest predation that the writer wrote about, we know from turtle biology that those adult turtles have to remain in the population for many decades to reproduce year after year. And without that ability, the populations just simply cannot sustain themselves. And so harvest of adult turtles by commercial turtle harvest has a much larger impact from a population standpoint than, say, nest predation from raccoons or skunks or other natural predators. That's not to say that those are not concerns, but relative to the population level impact, the loss of adult individuals is a much more significant issue. Thank you.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have some basic questions, and I'll send it over to the author, and you can either answer them or share with who you think would be the best. But we talk about the seller's license. My first question is, how many sellers do we have in the state of Minnesota at this point?
Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, currently there are 21.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Keeler. Yep. So to follow up with that, are they all Minnesota residents, or are there ways that, like, somebody from an outside state could obtain a seller's license in Minnesota?
Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, I will defer to DNR staff on that question.
Ms. Pierce or Commissioner?
Chairman and committee members, and Sean Sisler is also online, who oversees our licensing. But my understanding is the 21 remaining licenses are Minnesota residents.
Representative Keeler.
Yep. So a follow-up question to that. The reason that I'm asking these questions is, if so many other states have put restrictions on them, one, I want to make sure that we're not having this outside population come in. My next question is on the statute that talks about the apprenticeship program. Is there any restrictions on the apprenticeship program partnered with licenses that make sure that you're Minnesota residents? I just want to make sure that we're talking about not opening the door for other states to be able to come in participate in our elimination of turtles. So is there a loophole that we're missing when we talk about this apprentices buy-in?
Ms. Pierce.
So the apprentice piece is actually has to be in relation to the original holder. And I will have to find out if there is a loophole there. I am not sure at this point if there's some way that person could be an out-of-state resident. I can get back to you on that.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Yep. Last question then. So my last question, I guess, and more of a suggestion, is I know that we do reports, it's stated in and all of that, from March to November, by the 10th of each month, every seller has to provide a report. Maybe in that report, the apprentice addresses are shared, but also, is this how we're identifying if a seller is over on a limit or somewhere in these restrictions?
Ms. Pierce.
So currently on the commercial license, there is not a restriction. We just get the numbers of how many they are taking. And with this bill, it would propose a restriction on the recreational license, the recreational harvest, of 3. And that would be the same way we would deal with our fishing limits and things like that.
Representative Keeler?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Zlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward. I really like turtles. Not that that matters to this bill, but I've certainly saved several baby turtles who are wandering across the street from getting run over. I think one thing I want to point out to the committee and other folks is I certainly understand the concerns about turtles getting run over and predation, but we can't make a law saying predators can't eat turtles, and we can't make a law saying that you can't accidentally run over a turtle. It does happen. They do get stuck in the street. But what we can do is what exactly this bill is doing, which is saying that we're going to do what we can do and say we're going to put limits on the harvest to ensure that our population is healthy in the state. So thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you, Representative Vang. Would you like any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee's support on this bill, and let's save some turtles.
Great. I will renew my motion that House File 387, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Next up, we have House File 401, Law Enforcement Employee Salary Increase. Vice Chair Wislawick, would you like to take the gavel virtually, or the hockey puck here?
I will do that, Mr. Chair. Chair Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 401 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy.
Representative Hansen, you also have an author's amendment. Would you like to move the A1 amendment and explain it briefly?
Yes, I would move the A1 amendment, and this is a technical correction that was suggested by House research staff. And I'd ask for your support to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. Any discussion on that? I don't hear or see any. The clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, Rick, yes.
Hansen, yes. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, yes.
Wasilewicz, yes. Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman, yes.
Heinzman, yes. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, yes.
Acomb, yes. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, yes. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Ackland, Rob.
Yes.
Ackland, yes. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, yes.
Fisher, yes. Green, Steve.
Yes.
Green, yes. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, yes.
Here, yes. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, yes.
Jordan, yes. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, yes.
Keeler, yes. Lee, Fu.
Lee, yes.
Lee, yes. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, yes.
Lippert, yes. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie. Becker, Finn, Jamie. So it is 18 ayes and 0 noes.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is the MLEA bill. The reason this bill is in front of us is last October in the bonding bill, there was a provision that provided for an 8.4% increase for some members within this bargaining unit, state troopers, some state troopers. If you may remember, in December in the special session, there was a similar bill as this to correct that inequity to provide that same percentage increase for other MLEA members within that bargaining unit. DNR conservation officers, BCA special agents, commerce insurance fraud specialist, and gambling control officers. The reason it's in this committee is that conservation officers are the largest component of that. There would be a significant fiscal note that I think has been provided to the committee, and that we, as we've said before, there are items from last year that need to be resolved, and this is a significant one. The increases are retroactive to October 22nd, 2020, which is when the state patrol office's increase took effect. Members, this bill will have to go to several committees because there are different budgets that are affected. And I have a number of testifiers here today, a lot of testifiers, so we should probably start with them. Mr. Siljord, the Vice President of the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association, is first.
Mr. Siljord.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Caleb Siljord, and I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota Conservation Officers Association. I'm here today to thank Representative Hansen for his leadership on this important issue and authoring House File 401. I would also like to thank the committee for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the MCOA membership. I support this effort and encourage this committee and the legislature to approve this bill as soon as possible. A little background on myself. I'm a 13-year veteran law enforcement officer with almost 9 of those as a conservation officer with the DNR. I currently work out of the Sauk Center Station covering northwestern Stearns and southern Todd counties. Along with being the vice president of our officers union, and in addition to regular field duties, I currently assist the Division of Enforcement as a field training officer, background investigator, academy instructor, use of force instructor, armorer, water survival instructor, mobile response team member, along with having the distinct privilege of being on our department's honor guard. As a conservation officer, I, along with my fellow COs, work tirelessly to protect the natural resources we all cherish here in Minnesota. As law enforcement officers, we also strive to ensure public safety is maintained in our assigned patrol areas. Oftentimes, COs are often called to assist other agencies as well. And in fact, prior to this hearing, I've heard that we have conservation officers present at some type of active shooter situation north of the metro. So in addition to these duties, conservation officers have been called into the metro area on multiple occasions throughout the last year to assist with civil unrest issues, including extended deployments in the metropolitan area in May and June. Using myself as an example, this task has included almost 30 days and close to 320 working hours of time spent at civil unrest events since May of 2020. During these deployments, conservation officers stood side by side with state troopers, oftentimes on a voluntary basis. This work came with no extra pay and the acceptance of both increased danger and liability. Our conservation officers did this despite the fact that they were the lowest paid law enforcement officers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area during those times. During the October 2020 special session, the legislature took historic and unprecedented action to bypass longstanding contract negotiations and approved a market adjustment of 8.4% for state troopers. The associations representing the remainder of the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, including conservation officers, BCA agents, gambling enforcement agents, commerce fraud agents, and fugitive apprehension agents, are here today to request you now address those of us left out of this legislation. For this group of almost 400 officers, it's not only a matter of fairness and equity, but places our group back on an equal playing field with regard to future contract negotiations. As it currently sits, state troopers are making approximately 10.4% more than DNR conservation officers. This equates to just under $4 per hour. Considering both the expanded duties of COs and similar hay ratings for the state trooper and conservation officer positions, it is hard for our membership to see that as anything close to fair. I hope this committee passes this bill to help ensure this inequity is addressed, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Silliard. Next up on the list is Mr. Henning. If you could please identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee, my name is Doug Henning. I am the president of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Agents Association. And I am here today to thank Representative Hansen for authoring this bill and for your committee allowing me this time to speak with you. Your committee action today and quick action this session will demonstrate your critically needed support for pay parity for your state law enforcement officers. I'm a law enforcement officer working at the BCA. My title is Special Agent. I'm currently assigned to the Homicide Section at headquarters here in St. Paul. I conduct and assist with death investigations, primarily in the metro area, but also in greater Minnesota as well. Occasionally, agents are also asked to conduct conflict investigations for other law enforcement agencies. As Caleb alluded to earlier, I will, after I'm done here with the committee, be responding to that incident outstate. I also have collateral duties with the BCA working as an instructor. I teach search warrants, and I teach a portion of the crime scene class to law enforcement officers, both in Minnesota and from outstate. through the course of my career at the BCA, I've had the opportunity to work in multiple sections. Prior to working or being assigned to homicide, I worked in the narcotics section and in the financial crime section. I've been a police officer for about 27 years. The last 15 has been with the BCA as a special agent. The law enforcement officers that make up MLEA, including the state troopers, represent approximately 800 state employees. We have collectively bargained with the state for almost 40 years. The action in the October 2020 special session to provide a market adjustment to the state troopers was certainly warranted. There's no question the data shows that the state troopers are making less money than their comparable peer groups. Law enforcement work is more difficult and stressful than ever before. Each and every officer and their family deserves the care and attention paid to right the current inequity in compensation and benefits. The legislature forgot about the rest of us in October. The remainder of the groups have similar data, which clearly demonstrates this market adjustment should be extended to our groups. In fact, the data shows our group is 13.8, up to 17% behind most of the state. And if you compare us to some of the larger metro departments, we're as much as 20% behind our peers. So as you can imagine, this is not only about wages, this is also about recruitment and retention. The pool of qualified candidates to fill special agent positions within our state law enforcement agencies is not large. For the BCA and other agencies, this is about attracting diverse candidates to make the BCA and other state law enforcement agencies reflective of the communities that we serve. Special agents work in whichever community we are called to daily. We need to draw these diverse candidates to our agencies to help ensure that we can carry out our mission. Our work today is more challenging than ever before. You heard from Caleb about the role of conservation officers. Here at the BCA, we are growing into many different roles, such as human trafficking, fusion center, use of force investigations, financial crimes, predatory crimes, including many others. We were also working at the Capitol and the governor's residence during the civil unrest, alongside the troopers and the conservation officers. In conclusion, I would like to thank you for your time and attention today. Please support your state law enforcement officers and pass this bill to ensure this inequity is addressed immediately. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henning. I do see a couple of questions. I'm wondering, Representative Heintzman and Lewick, if those are specific to Mr. Henning. I don't know if you can stick around, Mr. Henning.
I can, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Henning. Then Representative Heintzman and Lewick, we're gonna wait until testifiers are done since he can stick around. I know he said he has to get to an incident, but we're gonna wait to hold questions until testifiers are done. So next on the list is Brian Peters.
Hi, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Identify yourself for the record, and then you can begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Peters. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. The MPPOA represents over 10,500 law enforcement professionals across the state of Minnesota, as well as 2,000 retired members. Thank you for having me today. Madam Chair, I'm here, and members of the committee, I'm here to echo the testimony provided about the importance of passing this bill. It's among the MPPOA's top legislative priorities this session. This committee should have in its packet a letter signed on behalf of all the presidents of the associations impacted by this bill and supporting its advancement. The work of law enforcement has changed a lot in the last year. Officers are being asked to do more and more, often with less resources, to accomplish the protection and safety of our communities. Unless the legislature rectifies this inequitable position of pay parity, the lagging financial repercussions will be seen in recruiting and retaining across the state. At a time when more is being asked of our law enforcement officers on the street, it's not the time to leave these hardworking men and women out in the cold economically. Thank you for introducing this bill early in the session, having a hearing this week, and for anything you can do to expedite this issue as quickly as you can. Thank you, members of the committee and Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Next up, we have Rodman Smith. If you can introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this forward and the work to address this pay inequity issue. The bill addresses most of the concerns of DNR conservation officers, and I really appreciate the legislature's commitment to making the situation right. DNR conservation officers have responded and will continue to respond with the utmost professionalism in their daily work, and whenever we're called to protect public safety and ensure everyone has the opportunity to peacefully exercise their First Amendment rights. With law enforcement agencies working together more than ever before, it's important that all state law enforcement personnel of comparable rank and tenure are compensated fairly. DNR conservation officers routinely stand shoulder to shoulder with members of the state patrol. They perform a lot of the same work and they definitely take the same risk. It's simply not fair for one group to be paid less than another. The DNR Enforcement Division's effort to hire a diverse workforce that reflects the people of Minnesota will be hampered if this pay inequity issue is not addressed. Law enforcement already faces hiring headwinds, and it will be difficult for us to recruit new people and retain those we have when they can go to another state agency and be paid significantly more money to do the same type of work. I've spoken with leadership from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Department of Commerce, Department of Corrections, and they all agree with what I've said here today, and they will be addressing this bill as it moves down the line. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next up, we have Assistant Commissioner Meyer. You want to, we all know who you are by now, but if you want to identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I have no further testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Then next up, we have Paul Van Voorhees. You want to identify yourself for the record and present your testimony?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Van Voorhees. I am the president of the State Patrol Supervisors Association, and I was going to testify on the A2 amendment. Is that the appropriate time to do that?
Let's hold off until we get to that amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, I have James Showalter from MMB, if you want to identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, a Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, and appreciate the chance to comment on this bill, and appreciate Representative Hansen in the House taking it up. You know, typically, labor contracts don't become before this committee, and typically, I don't either. So it's just a couple of pieces of context that I wanted to make sure you had. One is just that MMB negotiates contracts based on collective bargaining, and it's a responsibility that's set in statute. We work with all 13 bargaining units of the state trying to enforce and create consistency and fairness across all of our employees. The legislative pay increases that were adopted last summer were very, very unusual, and it's important that it doesn't become a new practice. As I think the previous testifiers very capably articulated, there can have unintended consequences from those kinds of actions. And that's part of the reason why I appreciate the House taking this up. You know, the action, just so you know, for members, there's two different things that are at play here. One is both the level of pay. The other is the financing of the pay. Because in the labor contracts, it's also a issue of number of employees and the ability to pay. And so that those are both issues that were addressed in the special session. Key point number two is just that, you know, that we respect and thank all of the members of MLEA who do critical work to ensure public safety across the state and want to ensure that they're treated fairly. Equity and fairness are core values of the administration, and as it stands, there's a huge inequity in salaries for law enforcement personnel who perform same or similar job functions. That is part of what we try to manage and work through in our contract negotiations. Unfortunately, there's not a way for consistency at present. You know, the level of pay adopted in special session is well above pattern bargaining and is uniquely funded. This leads to the negative effect for key public safety operations and agencies in the specific units in question. So I think the last point I just want to raise and is make sure that the committee has awareness of is that these pay changes happened outside the context of collective bargaining, which are still ongoing. We have been and continue to bargain with MLEA, and they, members should know that future increases through collective bargaining will compound the cost of these legislative actions from the past or those that are in front of you right now. So because we're actively engaged in those negotiations, I'm not going to comment further on those specifics, but I do want to appreciate and just to thank the committee for its attention to this issue and the House in general as it takes up this issue. Thank you for the chance to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner Showalter. We are going to move to member questions at this point. Representative Heintzman, you put your hand down. Are you good?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to hold my question until we are discussing Green's amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Lewick.
Same here.
Okay. Any other member questions on this part of the bill? Not seeing any hands popping up here. All right. We do have an amendment. That is the amendment, Representative Green. That is your amendment. Do you want to move that amendment? Can you please explain the amendment for members?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move the amendment, and I'll give you a brief overview of the amendment, and then I will go right to testifiers, because I know that they can explain it much better than I can. But the bill that passed in October was lacking in more ways than one. We've heard some of those consequences from the way that bill was passed, but there was other issues as well. And even within the troopers on that bill, the raises were not across the board. And what happened was there were some folks left out. And on this current bill, the same folks are left out. And I can address more of that in questions later, but I think that if we go right to testifiers, I've been in contact with some of them, and I think that they can explain why this amendment is needed and move forward. So if we can go to testifiers, Madam Chair.
And just for reference, this is the H-0401A2 amendment. I do have one testifier on the list here that came up before. Mr. Van Voorhis, if you want to chime in here. Yeah,
thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just reintroduce myself. My name is Paul Van Voorhis. I am a lieutenant with the State Patrol and currently the president of our Supervisors Association. I've been a trooper for 26 years and a lieutenant for almost 19 years. I represent the majors, captains, and lieutenants of the State Patrol. And with the A2 amendment, it is going to potentially fix the pay gap that we currently have between our first line supervisors, which are our lieutenants, and our troopers. As you're aware from the previous bill, the legislature saw fit to compensate the troopers an additional 8.4%, which we fully support. And I'd like to point out, we fully support the other groups and MLEA in their movement towards that. However, in our situation, you have a unique situation. And if you can see my screen, Madam Chair. Okay. On the left side, on the very bottom of this depiction, it points out the various groups within law enforcement in the state. With MLEA on the very bottom, you see the state troopers who have received the 8.4%. You see the conservation officers to the right, BCA agents and commerce agents, which this new bill is going to correct. What has not happened, though, is that the ranks above them, which are the respective supervisors, have not received that 8.4% increase. As a result, we know right now in the State Patrol, we have lieutenants, junior grade lieutenants, somebody that's been on for one or two or maybe even 3 years, making less money than the sergeants that they're supervising. And if there's any time in our agency when we need competent, strong leaders, supervisors, it has been in the last year and continuing forward. Without that gap, if you will, which needs to exist to eliminate that compression, there is no incentive for a senior state trooper to attempt to promote to the rank of lieutenant, captain, or major for that matter. Now, should the bill pass with the rest of the MLEA groups, we're going to compound this problem to the other agencies. You'll have the same situation with the conservation officers. With the BCA, they have supervisors that are deemed special agent in charge, as well as commerce, corrections, and alcohol agents. They also have leadership or first-line supervisors that are deemed special agent in charge. The boxes around each one of those units, if you will, depicts which managerial, which plan they're in. So, for example, you have the State Patrol majors, captains, lieutenants, and the lieutenants of the DNR are currently housed in the commissioner's plan. the majors and captains of the DNR are in the managerial plan, and the special agents in charge for the BCA and the commerce agents are in the Middle Management Association. That is important to note because the language in the A2 amendment covers each one of those bargaining units, the Middle Management Association, the manager's plan, and the commissioner's plan. And again, those are supervisors that are directly supervising the MLEA group. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Van Voorhees. If you would mind switching us back to the screen here so I can see. Thank you. Representative Green, did you want to add something on to this? I know we had a couple of member questions.
Yeah, thank you for the testifier. He did an excellent job, much better than I could have done. But if it's not violating anything that you're supposed to be doing here, can you explain just a little bit of some of the responsibilities of the supervisor positions, say even some of the things that have happened in the last year, if that's possible, and the importance of having these people in place, maybe some of the training they go through, and responsibilities that they have when they take on these leadership positions.
Mr. Van Voorhees, if you could keep it brief, we do have a couple of questions to get to as well.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Representative Green, thank you for the question. So if we take just a few examples of what's happened in the past 6 months, two specifically, the civil unrest in Minneapolis, and just as equally important as protecting the Capitol complex. As some of your previous testifiers have pointed out, we place state troopers, conservation officers, BCA agents, all in the field to deploy in that mission. And when we are given that mission, it is your first line supervisors, your captains, your lieutenants, your majors, who are doing the intricate planning for those operations. Of course, the men and women in uniform and the BCA agents who are carrying out those missions are vitally important, but it is your leadership who have a higher level of responsibility. They are the ones that are held accountable to ensure that the mission is completed, that the employees are operating safely, that they're following constitutional rights. There is a wide list of responsibilities that is placed upon a first level or even middle manager when it comes to these types of operations. So specifically to the civil unrest that happened in the metro, and it's planning right now as we're moving into the officer trials. You have a group of supervisors, both State Patrol and DNR, as well as BCA, who are intricately involved with the city of Minneapolis and Hennepin County, planning the response for that. And so their varying levels of education range from a 2-year degree to a 4-year degree. Some supervisors have master's degrees. They also get sent to various types of employment, educational opportunities, whether it be the FBI school or some type of police institute for training. So these are typically men and women who rise to these responsibilities, to these positions by testing. Their performance backgrounds are taken into account. They have to interview. They have to show the ability to lead men and women, and it is an important position. And without that pay increase, if you will, there would be no incentive, as I said before, for an employee, if an entry-level employee, to want to take that position, if you will, for the added responsibility with no extra pay, if you will. I hope that answers your question, Representative Green.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, Mr. Van Voorhees, thank you for your work. But the slide that you put up, and maybe you'd like to put that up again, I think indicates the challenges with the A2 amendment, because we're then dealing with three additional bargaining units beyond the MLEA. We're dealing with the Middle Management Association, the manager's plan, and the commissioner's plan. And so the job descriptions that you provided, are valuable and important. But the inequity that we're dealing with in this bill is within one bargaining unit. And I think it is a cautionary note of legislating contracts. And so once we start legislating in contracts, we disrupt the entire bargaining process. And so what I'm trying to do here in the bill is correct the inequity within the bargaining unit MLEA. And I understand what Representative Green's amendment is to also correct that with MMA, the manager's plan, and the commissioner's plan. And I think that greatly expands the scope of the bill, and also would have to be require significant discussions and budget impacts in each of the committees that are affected.
Representative Green, did you want to respond to that? And then we'll take Representative Luke's question, then we have to move on.
Yes, and I'll do some of this when we're ready to, right before the vote. But first of all, I did want to just clarify that the people in these management positions didn't start out in management. They started out and they worked their way up. So they were all either troopers or conservation officers, as I understand it. The other thing is that, you know, if you're looking to fix the inequities, this should be part of the bill. Because if it's not, you may be fixing one part of the inequity, but you're creating another greater inequity somewhere else. And this does have a lot of stops to make, and there will be a lot of discussion on this, but this is a very important piece that should be in this bill. So I hope that the Chair Hansen will reconsider on this amendment. I think it has to go in now as we move forward. And if there is any other questions, we'll not only answer them here, but in other committees as well. Thank you.
Representative Lewick, you have a question?
Really just a comment, and that is my, you know, full support for Representative Green's amendment here. And also I appreciate and thank Chair Hansen for bringing this bill forward. But I think it's just absolutely critical that we don't continue this halfway effort here. Those supervisors are going to literally be in a situation where they're going to be paid less than the people they supervise. And for us to go forward without laying that on the table and accepting this that amendment, this to me sends the wrong message to our folks in law enforcement that, well, you know, it's too technical, too hard, might cost a little more money. When the legislature stepped in and decided to get directly involved as a third agent in the bargaining process, that shattered the bowl. It's broken, and you're not going to fix it by just doing halfway measures of tinkering with this. So again, I just really, really urge that we take this amendment. Might slow down the process, but we got to get this right because our law enforcement people are put on the line every day, and nobody's mentioned line three, but I again want to commend particularly the conservation officers that stood toe-to-toe with our county sheriff's department every day up there in Aiken County and endured cat calls and disrespect from even lawmakers that are actually part of the legislature here, while those very lawmakers were standing in literally a violation of the law. They were breaking the law. They weren't arrested. They weren't ticketed. So again, the patience and the types of things that our law enforcement people have to endure merits that we do this right. So just can't say enough about it. Let's get it right the first time, and let's not patchwork this thing. The mold is broken, and we got to fix it. Thank you.
Representative Heinzman, please be quick. We got to move on here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I think we need to take the time necessary to do the right thing. And Dale, Representative Lewick, I should say, absolutely nailed this issue. The train's already out of the station, and I appreciate, Chair Hansen, your comments on this issue, but, you know, Dale is right. If we are going to be legislating contracts, why don't we get that right here now? I'm a co-author on this bill. I fully support it. And I'm hearing Green's amendment, Representative Green is on the money. We need to make sure that we don't leave people out, or we're going to be right back where we started, trying to fix another problem that the legislature created by leaving out a part of the folks that are involved in this bargaining unit. So, it's just a really frustrating situation, and I understand the spirit of what you're saying, Chair Hansen, but, you know, at the same time, I hope we can do this right, you know, right now and get the amendment added on.
Madam Chair.
Yep, go ahead.
So I just want to point out a couple of things. I understand the issue of working your way up. I actually was in the Middle Management Association. I was one of the board of directors before I was elected, and I had been in MAPE before that and was represented by MAPE. And then when I went into a supervisory position, I was represented by Middle Management Association. And so that's why we're trying to focus on one bargaining unit here. And again, it shows that when the legislature gets involved, there's unintended consequences. Madam Chair, I think the amendment is actually out of order because it greatly expands the financial cost of the bill. I know that Representative Eklund will have a bill for the supervisory classes, Middle Management Association, and maybe the commissioner's plan and the manager's plan. But those particular components, maybe that's where that can be discussed in other committees where this will be going. But I think the amendment is out of order in terms of its components right now.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And the H0401A2 amendment is, I'm gonna rule that out of order for this discussion.
Madam Chair.
Trying to see whose hands are up here. Representative Heinzman.
Madam Chair, this is getting into some really strange territory here, ruling an amendment out of order in committee. I'm not sure where in the world we're going with this here, but that is highly unusual. I'm not sure that that makes sense going that direction with this.
Representative Green.
I agree. I don't know if there's any precedence for ruling something out of order in committee, especially when it is directly related to what's going on here. We're in a finance committee. It's the first step of this bill. Is there a way then, if we're going to rule this out of committee, out of order, can I appeal the ruling of the chair?
You can do that, Representative Green.
Then I will. And I'll ask for a roll call on that.
Representative Green appeals the ruling of the chair. We will take a roll call on that vote. Just so folks in the committee are aware, Representative Becker-Finn, I saw your hand go up related to this. Did you want to say something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to point out that our committee rules include the House rules and Mason's, and so it's completely appropriate to follow those same protocols in committee. May not be as common as on the House floor, but it's certainly within the purview of the chair to make that call.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. I figured that's what I had to do with, since Representative Becker-Finn is kind of the Mason's rules expert here. So back to the appeal of the ruling of the chair. Representative Green has appealed the ruling of the chair. Just so members know, a yes vote upholds the ruling of the chair that we don't attach the amendment, and a no vote is to reverse the ruling of the chair that we consider the amendment.
Madam Chair, is there discussion?
We don't have time for discussion, Representative Becker. Did you have something you wanted to say really quickly?
Well, I'm kind of appalled that because we have one member that may not agree with it, and because that person serves as chair can do that. I think that's misuse of power. And, you know, if time's an issue, we can move on. You know, one of the things that we've been seeing here this session is we're getting testifiers, and then us in the minority don't get the time to speak. That is just not correct. So I agree with what Representative Green. I think the chair is misusing his power, and I think we're setting a very dangerous precedent when the gavels changes hands, because as we know, it does happen in the House quite often. So that's my piece. I do appreciate you allowing me to speak, Madam Chair.
Representative Becker, I would I would tell you to take up concerns with use of time and power with the chair if you have those concerns individually. Reminder, members, a yes vote sustains a ruling of the chair, and a no vote is to reverse the ruling of the chair. Mr. Koppel, if you could take the roll on the appeal.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you. I've had my hand up for some time. I want to speak certainly in favor
of... You have 20 seconds, Representative Lewick. We have to move on.
Okay, you want to be that way? Let's just take the vote. I'm really disappointed with your antics as chair, and you probably don't deserve a gavel.
Mr. Koppel, please take the roll on the appeal of the ruling of the chair.
Hansen, Rick.
Yes.
Hansen, yes. Wasilik, Amy.
Wasilik, yes.
Wasilik, yes. Heintzman, Josh.
No.
Heintzman, no. Akam, Patty.
Akam, yes.
Akam, yes. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, no.
Acklin, no. Becker, Jeff.
No.
Becker, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Yes.
Eklund, yes. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, yes.
Fisher, yes. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, Steve, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, no.
Igo, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, who?
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, yes.
Lippert, yes. Lewick, Dale.
No.
Luke, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. By a vote of 11 ayes and 8 noes, the ruling is upheld.
The ruling of the chair is sustained, and the amendment is ruled out of order. Any further discussion on the bill itself? I see several hands. Are these moving around here? Is this discussion on the bill itself or other things? I see hands going down, going up. Representative Green, is this to the bill itself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have very little time left. There's a lot left to discuss on this bill. I would move we table this bill till another time when we have more time to discuss it.
Representative Green has moved to table the bill. Representative Hansen, did you have a...
I oppose.
Okay, so someone's going to have to tell me procedurally. There's a motion on the table. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a non-debatable motion, okay. So we'll have to go to their roll. If you were sitting next to me, I could tell you, but.
Okay, so the clerk will take the roll on the motion. The motion is to table the bill for future discussion. Is that correct, Representative Green?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Koppel, if you can take the roll on the motion.
Hansen, Rick.
No.
Hansen, no. Wasilik, Amy.
Wasilik, no.
Wasilik, no. Heintzman, Josh.
Yes.
Heintzman, yes. Akam, Patty.
Akam, no.
Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, yes.
Acklin, yes. Becker, Jeff.
Becker, yes.
Becker, yes. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
No.
Becker, Finn, no. Eklund, Rob.
No.
Eklund, no. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Green, Steve.
Yes.
Green, yes. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, yes.
Igo, yes. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, no.
Jordan, no. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, no.
Lee, Fu.
Lee, no.
Lee, no. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, no.
Lippert, no. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, yes.
Lewick, yes. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, yes.
Tice, Tama.
Tice, yes.
That is 8 ayes and 11 nays.
The motion does not prevail, and the bill is still before us. Representative Hansen, do you have any final remarks?
I would ask for your support. I renew my motion that House File 401, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 401, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to Commerce, Finance, and Policy. The clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Hansen, Rick.
Hansen, Rick, aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilik, Amy.
Wasilik, aye.
Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Ackland, Rob.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, no.
Keeler, no. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Aye, that is 18 ayes and one nay.
With that, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Commerce, Finance, and Policy. Representative Hansen, I know we have another bill on the agenda. Do you want to take that up in these last few minutes?
I'd like to try, and also I would move that House File 733 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Representative Hansen, you also have we're on House File 733 for folks who are here and watching. Representative Hansen, you also have an author's amendment.
Yes.
Representative Hansen, will you move the A1 amendment and explain it briefly?
I would move the A1 amendment, and Representative Heintzman had asked me if we have to take a roll call on author's amendments. So maybe to save time here, we can do that one by a voice vote. I will move the A1 amendment, this technical amendment that would add and replacement to the end of the account reference to be consistent with Minnesota Statute Section 84-946 and other asset preservation related accounts listed in the existing law being amended by the bill.
Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wishes. Any discussion? And we will do a voice vote on this one for folks. So all those who are in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
No.
All right. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a DNR agency bill. I have Mr. Commissioner Meyer here from the DNR to present the bill.
Commissioner Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. This bill is really technical in nature. What it is providing for, it's exempting the DNR's Natural Resource Asset Preservation account from the requirements in 16B.355 about reporting, making notice to capital investment committees in both bodies on projects. The projects that are funded out of our natural resource asset preservation account are projects to keep our facilities in the shape that our customers or our constituents, your constituents, people who want to go outside and recreate in the shape that they like. For example, a pit toilet, a gravel parking lot, or other projects that fall under our natural resource asset preservation account. We want to exempt ourselves from having to provide reports to the chairs on those types of projects. So 16B.355 requires projects where a specific appropriation is made. It cannot proceed until the project has notified chairs and ranking members. If we cannot get this exemption, we'll still have to just create paperwork for every small project funded out of the Natural Resource Asset Preservation account. We have worked with the Department of Administration. They support this. It was introduced last year due to timing. We were not able to make committee deadlines, and we would like your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Any further discussion? I see Representative Green has his hand up. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is a giant step backwards. We are constantly working on and talking. We constantly talk about transparency, and we let the public believe that we're all for transparency, and we want them to know what's going on and looking to hold people accountable. And now we have a bill that is going to allow another agency to pretty much do what they want without coming to the legislature for approval. And this is something that we see all the time. If you look at the bills that are passing, we're looking all the time to look into this agency, that agency, what's going on. And now we're within 5 minutes of the end of this meeting. We have no time to discuss this bill. This is poor planning. It's just ridiculous the way this is going on here and the things that are happening in this committee, all of our committees. And so I'm speaking against this bill. I hope people will not vote for this. And we need to do something different on this committee structures.
Representative Backer, I see your hand up. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I agree with Representative Green. This is too important a bill to do for us just 4 minutes. So I would move that we would table this bill so we have time to have proper discussion. So I would make that motion.
Representative Backer has made a motion to table the bill. I'm looking for clerk to take the roll on the motion.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, no.
Hanson, no. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, no.
Heintzelman, Josh.
Ben, yes.
Heintzelman, yes. Akram, Patty.
Akram, no.
Akram, no. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, yes. Backer, Jeff.
Yes.
Becker, Finn, Jamie.
No.
Becker, Finn, no. Ackland, Rob.
No.
Ackland, no. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Green, Steve.
Green, yes.
Green, yes. I go, Spencer.
I go, yes.
I go, yes. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, no.
Jordan, no. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, no.
Keeler, no. Lee, who?
Lee, no.
Lee, no. Lippert, Tom.
Lippert, no.
Lippert, no. Lewick, Dill.
Lewick, I.
Lewick, I. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, yes.
Nelson, yes. Tice, Tama.
Tice, yes.
Tice, yes. Then it's 8 yeses and 11 noes.
With that, the motion does not prevail. The bill is in front of us still. Representative Tice, I see you have your hand up.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just really would like to reiterate that I think we're pushing this stuff through. We're not giving it enough time to go through these bills to really know what's in them. And the last one just really made me angry that we won't entertain helping out the folks who are doing such good work for us. I just think it needs more time, more attention, and we're not giving it that. So we're not really giving these bills the due diligence. We're just not doing a good job for our constituents. It really makes me angry, and I just wanted to express that I'm really sad that we can't lay this over so we can have a better hearing on it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hanson.
We actually were laying this bill over for possible inclusion. So that was what the motion was. It was not going to be passed out of here. And that was the intent was to lay it over for possible.
What's up, man?
What are you going
to do
with those
ballots? Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm going to add to Representative Tice's comments. I think what we're frustrated more than anything about is the way that this committee is operating right now. And for those watching at home, this was a perfect example of Democrats not wanting to take a hard vote. And so we run out the clock and we avoid the issue and we don't let the minority have an opportunity to talk about this and put an important issue to a vote. And then very uncharacteristically in our process, we decide that we're going to go ahead and rule something out of order in committee without giving us an opportunity to vote on an issue. This is unprecedented. What's happened in this committee today is absolutely inappropriate. This has got to be done correctly and in order so that people have an opportunity to see where their representative stand on an issue. To rule it out of order in this committee today was completely wrong. And the minority needs to speak up and say something, and so I am. And so that's really where Tam was trying to go with this, and I think she was too nice. What's going on here today is shameful.
Representative Becker-Finn, do you have a final? We've got to wrap up here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to point out that it's also, I didn't call it out of order, but it's not appropriate to bring up motives. And, you know, we really should be focused on the bills, and members can read the bills and we can have questions about that. So appreciate the discussion that was had earlier today.
Representative Hansen, any closing remarks?
I think we're adjourned.
You moved to renew the motion to have the bill laid over? I want to make sure we do that.
Yes, I did. I
okay.
Moved to renew
just
the
want
motion.
To make sure. All right. Yes. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.